Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1344, we bring you a special Father's Day program featuring three stories by new Life Rattle writer Caroline Wade. Caroline Wade was born in 1993 in Austin, Texas, where her surrogate mother then lived. However, a mere 5 days later, her two dads were able to bring her to their home in Los Angeles, California. She lived a pleasant, privileged life and was treated like a little princess by her two adoring fathers. She grew up loving both the arts and athletics, especially the sport of pinching her younger brother when her dads were not looking. When Caroline was 12, the father she was closer to at the time was diagnosed with cancer, and everything changed. Her favorite sport then became running. She ran from virtue to vice and school to school until she graduated. Then she took a long run to Sweden. It was a bit too bleak for her there, so she took one more run to Toronto, where she became very tired. She decided she would take a quick break and reflect on all of her running, while also attending university for English and media. Caroline Wade currently lives in the West End of Toronto with her best friend, lots of plants, and a cat called Dumpling. With full control and blistering honesty, Caroline Wade delivers three memorable stories that center around a young woman's rebellion in the face of her father's illness and subsequent death. Her prose moves from shocking to heartbreaking against a backdrop of loss and the wealth and excess of Los Angeles. Framed between two scenes of a father struggling to calm his frantic daughter, the core of tonight's first story centers on the young woman's plunge into a narcotic tailspin after a dealer in a black car, the kind of car your parents warn you about on Halloween, sells her a bag of crystal meth rather than the expected cocaine. Let's listen now as Caroline Wade reads her story, Christina, tonight on Life Rattle.
Christina by Caroline Wade. Daddy John, Daddy Ron, I whisper, one of you, wake up. My two dads don't move. I pinch John's arm. He's the one with the authority to say yes or no. No point in waking Daddy Ron. He had chemo yesterday and has a hard time staying asleep after the treatment. John, I pinch him again. He lies still on his back, arms parallel to his body. His face looks hard as a brick wall. A pile of books, neatly organized from largest to smallest, lay stacked on Daddy John's nightstand with his reading glasses case on top. A glass of water on a coaster stands nearest to him. On the other side of the pile of books sits a silver picture frame with a portrait of my brother and me when we were young children. One of those Sears portraits that makes you look perfect. In the picture, we wear our Sunday best. I look at Daddy Ron's side of the bed. Papers and manila folders lie splayed across his night table. A yellow legal pad sits on top, stained from the foot of a wine glass that has made the ink of his sloppy scrawls bleed. A sip of whatever red he'd been drinking the night before remains in the glass. An uncapped pen on the edge of the table threatens to fall off. A picture of Tyler and me, my brother, just a baby, me maybe two or three, hangs on the wall behind the table. In the photo, Daddy Ron sleeps, cradling Tyler as I crawl across his chest with a smile on my face. John finally wakes up and rubs his eyes. What is it, Caroline? What time is it? 4:30. I can't sleep. I'm so itchy, Dad. Tears well up. I think I have lice or parasites or something. There are tiny bugs in my bed. John swings his legs over the side of the bed. He slips on his maroon house shoes. He stands up and ushers me by the shoulders back to my brightly lit bedroom. A black car, the kind of car your parents warn you about on Halloween, pulls into the parking lot located 4 blocks away from Notre Dame High School. Deep scratches mar one side, from the front door across to the back, as if it had been keyed. Shauna scrapes her cigarette against the cement planter we sit on. My eyes follow the car as it circles around the far corner and parks. Shauna stands up, turns to me with a smile, reaches out her hand, and pulls me up. I pull my cell phone out of the back pocket of my blue uniform pants. We stroll, arms linked, towards the car. I stop and pull out a cigarette from a pack of Marlboro 27s. I place the cigarette between my flaky, chapped lips and light it with my white Bic. "Yo, that shit is dangerous, you know," chuckles Roman as he rolls down the window of his shitty black car. "White letters are cursed. Bad luck." "I don't believe in luck," I purr, and lean against the passenger door. I take another long drag and blow thick, white smoke into the hot desert air. Shauna, with her hair pulled back, stands a couple feet away from the door facing Roman. She wears a khaki uniform skirt and a white polo shirt with the Notre Dame logo. Her loafers shine in the sun. Roman wears a large white t-shirt with a gold chain peeking out from around his neck. His head is shaved and faded tattoos decorate his long arms. His parents came here from Russia so that he could get a better education, he once told us. Roman dropped out of high school within the first 2 years. Shauna and I look at each other. She grins as if she had just found out that Miss Connor, our evil discipline administrator, had dropped dead. I giggle and turn back to Roman. "So here you go." I pull two $20 bills and a 10 out of my loose pants, which hang too low on my bony frame, and reveal my midsection. Aware that his eyes follow the movement of my hips, I pull them up. "Is this for a gram?" "A little bit more than a gram, baby. I got that Christina for you just like you asked." He looks up at me, licks his lip, and smiles. "You ladies want to go for a ride?" "Next time, Roman." Shauna sees that I feel uncomfortable. "We have to get back to school because our carpool leaves in, like, 25 minutes. "You guys are holding out on me, man. Don't want to spend a little time with your Roman now?" "No, come on, we do," I say. "We just have parents who actually give a shit." I shoot Roman a grin and flutter my eyelashes. "Okay, okay, ladies," he chuckles. "Have a good night. Don't do too much of that shit at once." He nods towards his hand, which holds the cocaine, and places it in mine as he shakes my hand through the window, in case anyone is watching. Shauna and I nod our heads in turn. We strut away from the car. "Damn, sure you don't want to go for a ride, little ladies?" we hear Roman say as he turns on the car ignition. Shauna and I giggle without turning around. I shove my hand in my front pocket, and we quicken our pace. We walk out of the parking lot onto Van Nuys Way and spot a red sign with faded gold lettering that reads, "Golden Lion Chinese House." We make our way through a small dining area, which has plastic chairs and foldable tables, to the back. We squeeze into the small, fluorescent-lit room. I pull my hand out from my front pocket and open my fist. A small plastic bag with skulls on one side lies in my palm. Shauna picks it up out of my hand and holds it up to the light. She looks through the clear side of the bag, and her eyes widen. "Dude, this isn't coke. These are crystals, not rocks or powder." "What?" I grab the bag. "What the fuck?" I hand the baggie back to Shauna and reach for my phone. I pull up the recent calls list and press talk. "Hello, Mama," answers Roman on the first ring. "What's up? Want to take that ride now?" "No, Roman, what the fuck?" I hiss. "You didn't give me coke. This shit is meth." "Yeah, Mama, I thought you knew. That's why I said I got Christina Aguilera, none of that other lady. I told you when you called. No snow, just ice, baby." I royally fucked up. I thought Christina Aguilera was just another street name for cocaine. I hang up the phone and look at Shauna. She shrugs. She didn't pay for it. I'm down, Shauna says. Okay, I say. I mean, I've tried it before, but I didn't really get high. Of course, Josh and his friends could have given me bunk shit, but whatever. Josh is my 19-year-old boyfriend, currently in jail for shoplifting at Robinson's. Let's just do a small line each and see how it is. If we have to toss it, then whatever. Not like it was my money anyways. Thanks, Bank of Daddy. Okay, Caroline, John says. What are these bugs you think you saw? I walk around to the side of the bed. It's the sixth night in a row I've been awake. I can't remember the last time I had something to eat. I'm still not hungry. I feel like I have electric batteries inside me that keep sending surges of energy throughout my body. I can keep going and going and going. I point to the little black specks on my white bedsheets. My pointer finger trembles, so I set it on the bed to stop it before my dad can notice. He bends over the bed and puts his face an inch away from the sheets. He furrows his brow and squints his eyes. There is nothing there, Caroline. Go back to sleep. I start to wail. Yes, there is. I'm so itchy, and my scalp is so itchy. There are little flecks there. See? I point to a spot on the bedsheet. That is dust or something, Caroline. Seriously, go back to sleep. No, Dad, I have to go to the doctor. I'm really itchy, I swear. My face feels flushed, and snot slides down towards my upper lip. Please, I'm not lying. I need to see Dr. B. I sit on the bed and pull my legs to my chest. I lower my head to my knees and sob. I wipe the snot from my nose and gulp for air. I look back up at John. He towers over me with his arms crossed. He looks at me like he sees through me, like he's searching for someone he knows. He turns around without saying anything more and goes back to his room. I slide down on my bed and pull my hands to my face. I study my palms and shriek. Little black specks come out of my palms. Little snakes twist and turn from the pores. I place my hands palms down and turn onto my stomach. I put my head on the backs of my hands and sob until I finally cry myself into a light sleep. A few hours later, a rough voice wakes me up. Caroline, get up. John's head peeks through my bedroom door. We are going to the doctor, like you asked. He turns on my light and then shuts the door. I listen to his footsteps trail down the hallway. I turn and look at my digital alarm clock. It blinks 8:30. I slept for 3 hours. I sit up and recall the hours before I fell asleep. I look at my palms. The snakes are gone. I grab my Velvet Underground CD case and pull out the little baggie with skulls on it. This shit is definitely not the bunk stuff Josh had given me. I make sure the Ziploc bag is sealed, then place the baggie back inside the CD case and slide it between two books on my nightstand. I will have to wait until after I see the doctor to do more.
That was Caroline Wade reading her story, Christina. Tonight's second story reveals the broader context of our narrator's plight as it moves in and out of scenes of her day-to-day life at school and at home, where her father is dying from cancer. Let's listen now as Caroline Wade reads her story, A Casket and a Priest.
A Casket and a Priest by Caroline Wade. I stand in the doorway of my parents' bedroom, a dank dungeon I usually avoid, and peek in on Aunt Lena, Auntie Jeannie, and my cousin Lara. The three women sit on my two dads' king-sized bed and surround Daddy Ron. They smile and speak with uplifting words, words that sound like clichés, clichés that make your eyes roll at the phony empathy. Daddy Ron lies completely still on the bed like a bag of potatoes that have been rotting away for months. He looks yellow and smells old. An IV sits guard at the side of his bed and pumps a clear liquid into his arm. John, my other dad, the dad who missed soccer practices and never packed a lunch, stands by the unlit fireplace, his back to me, a back that always seemed to be turned to me. I look back at Daddy Ron and then to the crowd on his bed. All that's missing is a casket and a priest. I sit in my first period math class and stare up at the clock. The second hand hypnotizes me. Tick, tick, tick. My eyes roll right, left, right, left. I try to will the second hand to fast forward. I just need one more bump. Caroline, will you please come here? A stern but kind voice breaks my trance. I push myself out of the desk and make my way to Mr. Leary. I stand in front of him and jut out my right hip. I tap my foot. I cross my arms. You don't have to take the final, but I need every single assignment you've missed this year by the end of the week. Otherwise, I'm going to have to fail you. I stare back at Mr. Leary. I blink. I stare again. I blink again. I feel myself starting to tremble. I widen my eyes so tears won't fall. I look up. I pull at my lower eyelid. I touch my eyeball as though there is something in it. I put my hand down. I cross my arms and grab my hip bones. I stare back at Mr. Leary. I finally nod and turn around. Each step back to my desk feels heavier than the last. I sit down. I hug myself. I stare up at the clock again. Tick, tick, tick. I just need one more bump. I start to close the door of my parents' bedroom when John turns around and sees me. He asks me to enter and visit Daddy Ron. Cousin Lara pulls me near her and urges me towards the bed. I sit down on the edge of the bed and stare at the comforter my parents have had since forever. I pick at the stitching. John tells me to talk to Daddy Ron. I obey. Hello, I say. Ron, Caroline is talking to you. Lena, is that you? Daddy Ron looks at me with a kind smile. My eyes feel hot. I take a deep breath. I get up and walk away from the people in my daddy's room. John follows me. You have to talk to him, Caroline. He hasn't got much longer. You have to tell him that we are going to be okay. I look up into his eyes. They look like they've been open in a chlorinated pool for too long, red and bloodshot. The corners droop, and there are dark bags underneath. Even his laugh lines look sad. His naturally tanned face is now gray, with a purple tint. I wonder when he has last slept. I stare directly into John's eyes and can feel my own eyes gleaming like a bull's running towards a red target, horns first. He doesn't even know who I am. My eyes narrow, my jaw clenches. Tess is waiting for me. You and I, we aren't going to be okay. I run down the stairs and out the front entrance and slam the door behind me. I hear the ring of the school bell and shovel my math books into my blue JanSport backpack and zip it up halfway. I swing the strap around my shoulder and scuffle towards the door. Outside, the hot desert air hits my face. A drop of sweat runs down my face from my forehead. My heart pounds. I have 10 minutes until physical education. I find the nearest washroom. I run through the blue door and throw down my backpack next to a closed stall. I kneel down and place my face an inch from the gritty, tiled floor. I put my weight on my hands and scan the space under the doors. No feet, no sounds. I push myself back up, pull my uniform skirt down, and enter the last stall. I lock it. I put my foot on the toilet seat, reach inside my white sock, and pull out a small plastic bag. My hands start to tremble. I wipe each palm on my skirt. They feel cold and sticky. I squat over the toilet seat and open the tiny Ziploc bag. I tap the bag, and a buttery blob of white substance falls out and sparkles against the black toilet tank. I take out my Notre Dame student card and use it to cut up the soft rocks. I carefully chop the piece until it's powdery. I take the card and make a line. I unzip the front pocket of my backpack and pull out a tampon. I pull the tampon out of its applicator and throw it into the toilet. I pull the plastic applicator apart and have two tubular pieces. I take the piece that resembles a straw and hold one of its ends directly above the pile until it almost touches. I bend over and put my nose to the top end of the makeshift straw. The school bell rings and startles me. I lose my balance and fall back onto my butt. My thighs ache from squatting. I feel the blood rush back into my calves. They tingle. My palms sweat. I shoot back up to my knees and bend over the pile again. I put the straw to my nose and inhale as hard as I can as I move it from one end of the line to the other. I drop the straw and let my neck bend backwards. My head hangs limply. I cut my hand under my nose and put my thumb to my nostril. I sniff hard, pulling back anything left in my nostril to the back of my throat. I look into my cupped hand. A few tiny white specks stick to my palm. I pick the specks up with my finger and rub the dust against my gums. I quickly stand up and kick the flusher with my perfectly polished loafer. I grab my backpack. I unlock the stall and fling open the door. I hurry to the sink and turn on the faucet. I look up into the mirror and stare at myself for a moment as I wash my hands. I snort as hard as I can. I turn off the faucet and throw the incriminating straw into the trash. I look back at myself. I rub my palms against my skirt. I tousle my short, black hair. I pull my bangs behind my ear. I lean my head back so I can see up my nose. I rub away a few white flecks from the opening of my right nostril. My gums are numb. My pupils are as dark as the black lacquered toilet seat. I can't see the green of my iris. I grab my backpack and run towards the door. I'm going to be late for PE again. Tess and I walk down my street and reach my house. We climb the small hill on the front lawn, and she sits down on my swing. We laugh at whatever she talks about. I don't really know. I don't hear people anymore. I tell her to wait a minute while I go into the house. I run around the rose bush that lines the front porch. The roses look thirsty. I notice patches of brown spots on the pearl-white petals. John has been forgetting to take care of his rose bush. The house smells unfamiliar when I walk through the door. It's cold and clean, sterile. I haven't really been living here for the last few months. I'm not used to its new inhabitants and the scents they bring. Earlier in the day, the house had been filled with family, some friends, and a nurse, chatting quietly, mostly morosely. Now it's silent. I creep up the wooden stairs and pause by my parents' bedroom. I place my ear against the door and listen. It's quiet. I pull my head away and start down the hall towards my door when a hand grabs me by the arm and pulls me around. You are coming to talk to him now, Caroline. Tears well in John's tired eyes. He holds both of my shoulders. I've never seen John beg. I've only ever seen him instruct and demand. He's holding on because he is scared for us. Not for Tyler, not for me, but for you, and for you and me together. He wants to know that you are going to be okay. He wants to know that you and I are going to be okay. That we are going to love each other as best we can. I try to protest. Tess is waiting for me. I told her I would just be a minute. I jerk my shoulders away from John's grasp. I hate him more and more every second. I hate everyone in my house. Aunt Lena, Auntie Jeannie, Cousin Lara. All they do is talk at Daddy Ron. When I'm here, all they do is try to talk at me. Never with me. They act like they know me, like they understand me. The three of them talk to Daddy Ron as if they've lived here for the last 14 years. I can't talk to Daddy Ron in his present state. And I've been here and seen him every day for the last 14 years. all Daddy Ron and I did was talk. Until last month. Or hasn't been 2 months since I went to live at my friend's. I can't remember the last conversation I had with Daddy Ron alone. I'm losing sense of time. Every moment of the past month melts into one. I look back into John's eyes again. I can't remember ever seeing him laugh. Even though he has 3 little wrinkles around his eyes, someone must have made him smile once in a while all these years. John places his arm around my shoulder and ushers me into his and Daddy Ron's bedroom. We walk around the king-size bed to Daddy Ron's side. I look at him lying there, completely still, on his back. His skin is yellow, his eyelids purple. He looks calm, but my heart races. "Ron, Caroline has something she wants to say to you," John coos. I look at John. He nods. I look back down at Daddy Ron. His purple eyelids slowly part. Thin red veins dance around his dark irises. Daddy Ron looks through me. I hold his hand. I can't cry. "Daddy Ron, I promise that Daddy John and I are going to be okay. We will work things out. I promise. We will learn to work together. I promise." "Tell him you love him," John says. "I do. I love you so much, Daddy Ron." I drop his hand and run around the bed and out the door. I hear John follow me, but I run down the creaky stairs and out the front door. Outside, the sun hangs low and glows a dark orange. The sky looks pink. "What took you so long?" Tess asks. "Nothing. Let's go finish that blow." I grab Tess's arm and pull her up from the swing. We walk away from my house. I don't look back. I never see Daddy Ron alive again.
That was Caroline Wade reading her story, A Casket and a Priest. Tonight's final story takes us on a sometimes hallucinogenic journey of escape, ending in a dark, painful plea for an alternate reality. Let's listen now as Caroline Wade reads her story, Bad Trip.
A Bad Trip by Caroline Wade. 2 weeks after Daddy Ron's funeral, I wake up in bed, alone, for the first time in weeks. I open my eyes and see light creeping in through the cracks in the window shutters. I hear my BlackBerry and find it in my duvet. It's Tess. Her text message reads, "Pan Pacific, let's fly." I jump out of bed and scramble around looking for an outfit to wear. I find some cut-off jean shorts I bought a couple of years ago that didn't fit until this summer. I pull them up over my slender thighs and around my waist. They hang on me loosely and then slide down from my belly button below my protruding hip bones. I put on a belt before they fall off completely. My stomach growls. I grab an Adderall and take a swig of the cold coffee John left on my desk earlier in the morning. "I'm leaving," I shout to Tyler somewhere in the old house. I run down the hall and turn the corner to the mahogany-stained stairs. "If John asks," I yell again, "I went to Larchmont Village with Tess." My other dad, John, is rarely home when I wake up, and that's the way I like it. I see my purse at the foot of the stairs. I always leave it on the wingback chair in the formal living room. John always moves it to the foot of the stairs. It's his passive-aggressive way of telling me that I should take my purse to my room. I never do. I sit down next to my purse and put on my men's gardening boots. After my neighbor's husband died, she put a bunch of stuff out on the driveway for the taking. I grabbed most of it, including the men's Ralph Lauren leather boots from the 90s and a vintage cream mesh handbag with tassels on the handles. I grab my purse and stand up. I put Daddy Ron's old Ray-Bans on the top of my head. The sunglasses were the only thing of his I'd been able to secure for myself when he died. I wear them every day now. I wander through the breakfast room and into Tyler's den. My brother sits cross-legged, 5 inches from the flat-screen TV, with a game controller in his hands. I can smell the flamin' hot Cheetos he has hidden. "Die, motherfucker," he screams into his headset. "Do you know where Dad is?" I ask. If he's not in his office, he probably went to the gym. Tyler doesn't look up from the screen. "He wants you to clean your room, you know." "Yeah, fuck that. I'm going to meet up with some friends. If he asks..." "You're in Larchmont. I know, Caroline. You look like a slut, by the way." "At least I'm not fat. You should try some veggies, dumbass. Then maybe you'd have some real-life friends." "Fuck you." "No, not you, Sam. My sister," he hisses into the headset. "She's such a bitch." I roll my eyes and walk out the front door. Outside, the sun blares. I pull the sunglasses from the top of my head down on my nose and hurry down Irving Boulevard to 3rd Street. The long blocks have houses with perfectly manicured green lawns, each lined with crisp green trees and hydrated flowers on all sides. Gardeners stand in front of homes with their hoses. No one in our neighborhood seems to care that we're always in a drought. I reach 3rd Street and walk west until I hit the bus stop at Lorraine Boulevard. I sit against a palm tree and light up a Marlboro 27. I hope someone's mom sees me smoking. I love the look on their faces. John always looks disappointed when he catches me. I don't care. But the mothers of Hancock Park always, without fail, look shocked. I flick the cigarette butt into the street when I see the bus approach. The flame flickers beautifully and brightly and tries to hold on, but then, like everything else, it dies. I step onto the bus and walk to the back so I can exit the back door quickly. I stare out the window, looking but not really seeing anything. Suddenly, the bus passes Pan Pacific Park. I bounce out of my seat and crawl over the little girl sitting next to me. I pull the cord for the requested stop. A block later, the bus stops and I get off. I run the 2 blocks back to meet Tess. Despite smoking, I still have the endurance that 2 years of varsity cross country has given me. Tess sits on the curb in front of the 7-Eleven at the east entrance of the park. She holds 2 brown paper bags in one of her arms, and a cigarette dangles between her painted red lips. I wrap my arms around her neck. She smacks my ass with her free hand and says, "Sup, bitch." "Okay, so what exactly are we getting today? E or acid?" "Honestly, I'm overrolling," I say. "Let's do acid. I don't think I've ever really done good acid." "You got it, baby." Tess smiles and hands me one of the paper bags. "Drink this. I paid some homeless guy to get them. It's a 40 of Old English." "Thanks, girly," I reply. "You know, I'm still selling fake IDs. I'm happy to get you one at cost. Just steal the money from your parents." Tess ignores my offer. We get to our feet, and she pulls out her cell phone from her back pocket as we walk down the cement path that leads to Pan Pacific Park. Considering its central Hollywood location, it's a big park. I played soccer here as a kid. Softball, too. "We're meeting Mary, Johnny, this weirdo junior, and some random girls," Tess tells me. "Oh, and, Liam." Liam is a boy on summer vacation from his behavioral issues boarding school. We walk up a hill overlooking the children's play area. All the people Tess named sit on top of a creaky picnic table near the top. I can see that everyone has already been drinking. I hold my breath, close my eyes, and take a sip of the Old English as we approach them. When I open my eyes, I see Liam approaching from the parking lot. Liam's driver sits in his mom's black minivan about 50 yards behind him. "What's up, guys?" Liam smiles and high-fives one of the boys. He looks over and sees me staring at the van. He moves to his left and blocks my line of sight. "Oh, hi there," I say. "Long time no see." Liam picks me up in his arms. He cradles me like a baby and squeezes me tight. I giggle and look up at a short neck and round face. His blonde hair is buzzed in a military style kind of way, but it doesn't stop some curls from peeking through. I see blonde stubble on Liam's chin. His cheeks are bubbly and pink, not smooth. The craters under his cheekbones are red and irritated. It looks like he's been picking at his cysts. His eyes are clear. His nose is a bit turned up, which I've never really noticed before. The only truly good-looking thing about Liam is his body, turned hard from the drills that are a part of his military schooling. Liam gently sits me back down on the picnic table. I playfully hit his arm. We smile at each other. His eyes gleam. "Liam, where the fuck have you been?" Tess screams when she notices him. She kisses Liam on the neck and doesn't wait for a response. "You guys, I'm so bored. Let's get fucked up." We sit around for hours, drinking and laughing and screaming. We watch the sky turn orange with pastel pink streaks. The sun's glare turns into a colorful haze. As the moon starts to rise, a foggy gray takes over the day. Nighttime approaches. "Tess, I'm not ready to go home," I slur. "Aren't we supposed to get acid anyway?" "Yeah, the guy is going to be here any minute, dollface. Liam, you down?" "Definitely," he responds and looks at me. Moments later, a young Mexican guy in his early 20s approaches Tess and whispers something in her ear. I sit between Liam's legs, propped against the picnic bench, and sip the last of my beer. I watch Tess saunter off a few feet away with the rough-looking guy. He wears baggy pants and a t-shirt 3 times bigger than his actual size. A gold chain hangs around a thin, long neck. He is lanky and gaunt, his cheekbones sunken and full of craters like Liam. It doesn't look like the dealer got his craters from acne. His pupils are as big as dimes. He looks around, side to side, and scans the area as he hands Tess tinfoil shaped in the size of a gum wrapper. Tess hands him the money she collected and walks back to what remains of the group. Her phone buzzes. She looks at the screen and quickly denies the call. Tess, Liam, and I take 2 tabs out of the foil. I place mine under my tongue. They quickly dissolve. The 3 of us walk to the bus stop and get on the first bus we see. Tess looks at her phone again when it buzzes. "Shit, I have to go home," Tess says as soon as we sit down in the back of the bus. My parents are flipping out. I didn't tell them where I was going. They've called me like 10 times in the last 20 minutes. At the same time, I get an angry text from John insisting on my presence at an impromptu family dinner. Okay, shit, I reply to Tess and turn to Liam. "Well, Liam, you can come with me. We just have to go meet my dad for a second at this restaurant on Larchmont." "Sounds good. I'm probably going to have to get going soon anyways," Liam says. "My driver lost sight of us and will be requesting my location soon enough." "Next stop, Larchmont Village," an automated voice announces. We hug Tess goodbye and exit the bus. Liam and I stroll along the wide sidewalk, hand in hand, and chat excitedly, full of anticipation. Neither of us can feel the acid yet. When we get to La Bottega, John and Tyler sit across from each other at a booth near the front window of the bistro. Liam slides into the seat next to my brother. I sit next to my dad and avoid direct eye contact with him. "Hi, Father," I say dryly as I look across at Liam. "Hello," he chirps. "Didn't know you were bringing a friend. How was your day, you two?" "Fine. I'm not hungry. We just came to say hi." "Well, sit with us for a few minutes." John folds his hands together on the table. His napkin is neatly laid across his lap. "What did you guys do today?" "We just hung out around the neighborhood. Dad, I'm really tired. Liam's driver is picking him up soon. I think we're going to get going." "Just sit for a minute, Caroline." All of a sudden, John looks pixelated. I giggle. The world starts to look like the bubble wrap you pack inside a carton to protect something breakable. Air and plastic bubbles begin to pop into bursts of color. Everything begins to move. The walls splash towards me in giant waves, full of blues and yellows, and then the waves recede, the room flat and normal for a moment. I look at Liam. He's looking around the room with his elbow on the table and his palm covering his mouth, trying to stifle his own giggles. "What's so funny, you two?" "Nothing, Dad. We just really have to go." I jump up and motion for Liam to follow. I know John won't make a scene in public. Love you. Bye. We hurry out of La Bottega and run down the street laughing hysterically. We stumble to the corner of Larchmont and sprawl out on a bench in front of the neighborhood bank. Everything around us, the trees, the walls, the cement, all seems so funny and different than before. Lights turn into dark shadows of neon colors. Trees have green and magenta dragon heads that swirl around in the light wind and dance to a song in the breeze. Liam's phone rings. He picks up. The wind song stops. Liam's driver waits for him on the opposite corner. Shit, we laugh. Liam says he'll call me when he gets home after his parents go to bed. I laugh again, unintentionally. I can't help but laugh and laugh and laugh. I giggle and wave goodbye as he drives off. I stand at the corner and think of what to do next, but I'm distracted. Everything catches my eye. I see the green dragon heads wink at me and giggle. Then the digital man on the walk sign steps off his post and into the night all on his own. I smile at him, wave goodbye, and wish him good night. I shake my head. I've got to get home. I march forward and down a familiar route. I've been walking Larchmont since I can remember. And suddenly, I'm home, alone, on acid. I laugh. I grab my MacBook from the living room, throw my purse and sweater on the wingback chair, and run upstairs to my room. I stare for a while at my 60s-style curtains from Urban Outfitters. Painted birds on the fabric fly in and out of their cages, flashing their turquoise and orange feathers at me playfully. I laugh. I giggle. I sip some water. It tingles my mouth, teasing my taste buds, making me giggle. I put on Elliott Smith and listen to the words soar slowly around my head. Everything feels beautiful. I can feel the beauty. The door to my room flies open. John towers over me. What the hell are you doing? Nothing, I yell. He grabs me by the arm and violently yanks me up. He snatches my computer and looks through my photo booth. Are you taking sexy pictures, Caroline? Are you going to put these on the internet? I cringe at John's use of the word sexy. No, Dad. I was just looking through old pictures. Ugh, Jesus. I'm going out for a cigarette. My high begins to change. I'm more alert, but things still look different. My heart begins to race. Fine, John finally says, but I'm taking your computer with me for the night. I spin around in horror. No, Dad, that's not fair, I cry out. I wasn't doing anything. I try to take the MacBook from his grip, but he has at least 150 pounds and 6 inches on me. The laptop does not budge. I run down the stairs and out the front entrance and slam the door behind me. With shaky hands, I place a cigarette between my lips. Fuck. I inhale the smoke deeply and blow it out, trying to exhale my anxiety along with it. I sit at the end of the driveway and look up at the night. The trees appear angry with me, and so I quickly finish my cigarette and run back inside. The house is completely still. Tyler is not in front of his TV. John must be asleep. Not even slamming every door in the house wakes him up. He must have taken a bunch of Vicodin again. I slowly make my way up the old wooden stairs. I can see the creaking with each step I take. I open the door to my room and freeze. Everything spins in circles around me. None of the patterns flirt with me anymore. The birds have turned their backs to me, their feathers now black. The light from the ceiling lamp attacks my eyes. I can feel my heart pound against my ribcage, drop to my stomach, and bounce back up into my chest. I hear ringing in my ears. I try to gulp some air, but forget how my lungs work. The room shrinks in on me as it continues moving in circles. I'm not having fun anymore. I run down the hall in tears and past John's room. I run into the sunroom. I think the air might be different in here, might be easier to drink. It doesn't work. I cry out again. I trip to my father's room and knock. No movement, no sound. Tears stream down my face as I search for my phone. I call my therapist. No answer. I call again. After several tries and three messages, my phone rings. "Yo, do you know where to get any weed?" asks a voice I don't recognize. "Who is this?" "It's Chelsea, duh. Don't you have caller ID?" "Chelsea? Chelsea! Chelsea, it's me, Caroline." "Yeah, dude, I know. I called you." "Chelsea, I took acid earlier, and now I'm by myself. I think I'm dying. You have to come pick me up. Please, my dad won't wake up. My heart hurts." Okay. Are you at your house?" "Yes, yes, just come," I scream into the receiver and then throw my phone down. I run into my room and throw open the windows. As I wait for Chelsea to arrive, I call Liam. No answer. My heart races. It's 2 a.m. I call again. Straight to voicemail. My heart continues to race. I look at the bright screen and squint to see the tiny figures. I scroll and select the second number under Liam's name. I call twice. Hello? Answers a confused voice. "Hi, I need to speak to Liam right now," I bark at the woman. "What? Who is this?" The voice sounds angry. "It's 2 a.m. I know, but it's important. I really need to talk to him." "Who is this? Caroline? What are you on?" I hang up. How did the voice know my name? Wait, who did I just call? Fuck. My heart feels like it's racing faster and faster every second and will soon explode out of my chest. I don't want to die. I go outside and wait on the lawn. I watch for car lights. I finger the damp grass around me. After what feels like an hour, a car pulls up with all its windows rolled down. A dainty arm hangs out of each side. Cigarette smoke floats out of the old Mercedes and disappears into the black night. "Get in," Chelsea's scream whispers. I run into the car and hop in the back. Maggie sits in the front passenger seat. "We're going to Maggie's. Why are you wet?" I look down and notice that most of my lower half is soaked. I look back up at the girls. "I'm not sure." Maggie starts to laugh. "Dude, she pissed her pants." They turn around, shake their heads, and turn up the volume on the stereo. I don't know what's playing, and I don't care. I'm not alone anymore. I'm alive. When we get to Maggie's, they help me take off my clothes and put me in the shower. I stand in the water, briefly, and then jump out. I don't want to be alone for longer than I have to. I put on a pair of sweatpants Maggie left on the bed. I find the girl smoking on Maggie's front porch. "We're going to have to get the skaters to come and get you and take you home soon. The boys will be the only ones who can give you a boost onto your tree so that you can get back into your room," Chelsea says. "Is that okay?" "Okay," I say. "I just want to stay a little longer and sit with you." Chelsea nods and hands me a cigarette. I light the wrong end and cough. She rolls her eyes and hands me another. The girls turn and talk to each other about their night while I huddle alone on a chair, facing the street, and watch the sky get a little lighter, a little bluer. I sit next to the girls and listen to them talk about normal teenage things. Boys and parties and the stupid curfews they are supposed to obey. I try not to cry. I take a drag of my cigarette. I don't want to be high anymore. I don't want to be high ever again. I just want to sleep, and then I want to wake up. More than anything, I want to be with Daddy Ron, cuddling him, sitting in his lap, holding his thumb in my hand. I take another drag of my cigarette and crush the butt in the ashtray. I watch as the red embers flicker once and then go out. I beg to some god in my head. I beg that I return home and fall asleep, and in the morning, when I awake, John will be dead, instead of Daddy Ron. Daddy Ron will be asleep, and this whole night and the last few weeks will just have been a bad nightmare, a bad trip.
That was Caroline Wade reading her story, Bad Trip. This concludes Life Rattle number 1344. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Caroline reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune into our next show for more new stories.